Hi there, friends, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of the 123 Mom Squad podcast. So happy you're here and still listening to me and my wonderful, inspiring guests. So on today's show, I interview a woman all the way from UK. Her name is Jolly Knott. Now, Jolly is a holistic astrologer, a Reiki master, and the founder of Booty Mindful. Her beliefs on healing are grounded in the power of heart-centered connection and presence. She uses a variety of techniques incorporating symbolism, stories, astrology, energy work, and a lot more. She also seeks to provide a nurturing space for those women willing to go deep in furthering their journey of self-understanding, self-development, and growth. Healing is about moving from fixity to flow and learning to become one's own medicine. When we heal from within, we begin to heal all that is around us too, making the world a better place for everyone. And isn't that so true? Let's make this world the world that we once used to know. It is so unrecognizable these days. It is just not the world we want to live in and bring our kids up in. So any help that we can get and the more information we can gather from anybody with all these different type of wellness modalities, I hope you're all really, really absorbing this information and applying them to your everyday life. So without further ado, let's get you into the episode with Jolly. I hope you guys enjoy. Hello, hello, my friends. I am Jenny Lynn, and this is my show. I am a wife and mom of two crazy kiddos. I have struggled many years with chronic illness and pain. I have a passion to find out as much as I can while navigating through life, not always feeling 100%. I have realized that having a positive mindset is a must in today's crazy world. You deserve to live this life showing up as your best self, and I can help you get there. If you've been feeling lost after becoming a mom, you're not alone. I know that incredible woman is still in there, just begging to be found. I am here to create a safe, non-judgmental space for like-minded women. Let's empower each other. I am so happy you're here. Now, let's jump into the 123 Mom Squad podcast with me, Jenny Lynn. Hi, Jolly. How you doing?
I'm good, Jenny. How are you?
I'm great. It's so nice to see your smiling face again. I'm so glad that we're able to have this little chat, and let's talk about everything about our mind and body and life and energy, and let's educate everybody. So let me just give you a quick introduction here. So this is Jolly Knott, and she's a holistic astrologer, Reiki master, and the founder of Booty Mindful. I said that right. Her beliefs on healing are grounded in the power of heart-centered connection and presence. Jolly uses a lot of different techniques to help us kind of balance our mind and our body and our spirit, and kind of using different modalities of energy work. So let me ask you this. Where did you start your journey? Your knowing that you wanted to get into the health field, where did you kind of start out?
So great question. And first of all, thank you for having me on, Jenny. Let's see. So my father was a doctor. He's retired now, but he was a surgeon. And so growing up, there was definitely an invitation, shall we say, for me to also consider going into medicine. I didn't. But around 1994, I kind of had this urge, I guess, to maybe consider going into medicine. So I took a bridging course, and, you know, this was like an introductory, you know, if you're interested in medicine, this is like a taster, if you will. And I really enjoyed it, but it didn't go anywhere. I was working in the financial markets at the time, and I was like, yeah, I like it, but there wasn't enough of a pull. Fast forward 20 plus years, and I was in Japan at that point, and I had just gotten married, and was trying to start a family. And, you know, I was in my late 30s, just about to turn 40. It wasn't happening. And that's really, I think, when, I guess you would say, my spiritual journey began. I started to learn Reiki. I was regularly getting acupuncture, shiatsu massage, really learning about my body. And I really kind of came face to face with how much more there was to my health than just doing an annual physical every year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, originally the doctor was like, well, there's nothing wrong with you. Everything checks out, but I wasn't getting pregnant. And, you know, I went through two rounds of IVF, full IVF. And on the second one, I had a miscarriage and I just was crushed. I could not go through another round from scratch, another round of IVF. And so that's when I really started to dive deep into kind of energy medicine and just really leaning into a more kind of spiritual vibe, because I thought at the time it felt like that was comforting for me and very soothing.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What made you, or why did you try acupuncture? Was it because of your, I guess, not being able to conceive? I didn't know that they kind of, I guess, correlated acupuncture with possibly that. So that's interesting.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I didn't really know that much either, but at the time, so acupuncture is an art that came out of China and is prevalent in Japan. They use slightly finer needles in Japan than they do in China. But, you know, the foundation is pretty much the same, which is in traditional Chinese medicine, there are 12 meridians that run through the body. There are several meridians, but there are 12 major meridians, and the meridians are each connected to an organ. And the idea is that qi, which is kind of like your life force, the universal energy, if you will, flows through the meridians. And if you imagine them as like kind of like streams and or rivers, maybe sometimes the flow will get obstructed. It will get, you know, the flow will get obstructed, and then it instead of flowing through, it starts to kind of stagnate. It turns into this kind of pool, or maybe the flow goes in reverse. You know, there's so many different ways of looking at it, but acupuncture is meant to be able to target these meridians and help restore flow. And so it can be used for a lot of different issues, including fertility issues. And so that was mainly why I started going. There was a doctor in Tokyo who specialized in fertility acupuncture. And so I went to see him, and yeah.
Okay.
We could say it worked, because in the end I did have, I you know, just when I gave up and got a second dog and all the rest of it, I found out that I was pregnant. So, and
that's awesome. And that's how it usually happens, right? It's like, okay, I'm done trying. I know quite a few of my friends that have done the same thing, and they're like, it's just not going to work for me. I'm done doing all the things. But I do think that a lot of that can be so stressful on your body. And then you, like, the stress itself tells the body that it's not the right home to kind of conceive and create a human. I myself had a miscarriage with my first pregnancy. I was in the first trimester, so I know how absolutely devastating that can be. And I'm sorry that you went through that too, because that's a big trauma that women carry, that I think you blame yourself for it. You know, what did I do, or what didn't I do? So I know that that can be very traumatic. With acupuncture, just a question, is that something that to kind of see benefits with that, is that something that you have to go to like on a regular basis?
Let's take a quick break.
Welcome to the Alchemy of Natural Healing. I'm your host, Laurel Dewey. True healing is an alchemical process, meaning it must transform you on all levels, body, mind, and spirit. What affects one affects all three. True healing is one of the hardest journeys you'll ever travel, but it's one of the most rewarding and fulfilling when you get to meet yourself for the first time. If you're ready to take that journey, let's get started.
Yes, yes. It wouldn't be like a one-off. When I was doing the acupuncture, it was to start with, actually, I was going twice a week. And in fact, I was going and doing it in tandem with the IVF. So this was going to kind of help me with the IVF. And I started off going twice a week. And just to circle back really quickly to what you were saying, you said it so beautifully. You're absolutely right that, you know, the body has to be prepared on the mental level, on the emotional level, on the physical level, on the energetic level for another soul, another human being to kind of incarnate, right? And so, yeah, you know, again, it was such a learning curve for me, because looking back, I can see how I didn't have all four levels ready. But I will say, you know, I continued to eat well. I wasn't, you know, I had increased my exercise because I was going out walking the dogs like three times a day. I was doing the the acupuncture. I was doing Reiki. My drinking habits had changed. I was taking an intuitive nurse in Colorado had told me, she flagged my thyroid levels weren't right. And so I was on thyroid medication. So, you know, again, looking back, I can see now that it was almost like I had almost every piece in place. And then I just needed the energetic piece to be in place for my daughter to come.
That's beautifully said. It kind of is crazy sometimes when you think, you know, that your body can literally create a whole nother living human. And there are times when I know that I find myself kind of going back on allowing my past scars and, you know, health problems and issues that I go through, I say, you know what, I may have scars and I may have whatever it is, but my body created two beautiful, healthy children. And that's all that I need to make me feel so unbelievably blessed and grateful for every single day. So on a different level, I can't ever compare anything else to my children, because my body created these two miracles, these two, you know, living souls that are breathing and talking back to me. But so I am forever grateful for my body. So on days that I feel that I need to rest, then I let my body rest. I mean, I think that it's a lot on a human body, and especially women. I don't think we give each other and ourselves enough credit for what it is that we go through mentally and physically.
Well, and then again, emotionally and energetically as well. Yeah. It's magical. It really is.
That's amazing. Can you touch on, I've done a few sessions of Reiki, but can you like define that? How would you actually define that word?
So Reiki actually, it refers to, as we know it here in the West, it refers to a kind of hands-on healing type of treatment. But Reiki was, I meant to say that the hands-on healing is something that we find in cultures from all over the world. You know, this idea of laying on hands and that being, having some kind of healing therapeutic effect. But the word Reiki itself is Japanese. Rei comes from the kanji, the Chinese character for spirit, if you will, or universe. And ki is the kanji for again, chi, life force, prana, as we say in Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. So it's this idea that there's this kind of spiritual life force or universal spirit, or, you know, basically the, it's the thing that animates us. So in acupuncture, we're, if you will, kind of manipulating the chi using needles or moxa, which is a type of mugwort that people burn. And it sounds weird, but essentially they place the mugwort on the skin at certain points, acupuncture points, and then they burn the moxa, and that is having a therapeutic effect. When we're looking at Reiki, we aren't looking so specifically at acupuncture points, which, you know, are very small and very specific. We are looking more broadly at the body. And what happens is the practitioner is trained to channel this kind of universal life force, this energy. And when they are treating someone, they are able to channel that energy for the client's benefit, if you will. I think the best way to think about it is like jumper cables for a car. So the practitioner is the jumper cable. They're not actually supplying the energy. The energy is coming from out there. But if I were to be treating you, then when I really lightly, really gently place my hands, you know, on your body, or I can hover them. My particular training was in lightly touching the body, but I will always ask a client, what do you prefer? Okay. But it's a really gentle, light touch. And often clients will feel warmth or tingling, or they might see colors, or they might just fall asleep. But usually by the end of the session, they will feel refreshed. I remember one client saying to me, oh, I just feel like I've had a lovely vacation away from myself, you know, and he said it a lot more charmingly, but I just thought it was so sweet. He was grieving, and he just really needed to have a break. And and that's what he felt that the session gave to him. So Reiki is first and foremost a spiritual practice. It's not connected to any religion. There are similar practices, I think, that can be found all over the world, but Reiki as we know it in the West came from this particular teacher in Japan in the early 20th century. His name was Dr. Mikao Usui, and it's actually quite interesting, just to digress really quickly.
Sure.
There were probably about four or five different forms of Reiki in the 1920s in Japan. And the only reason why we know about Usui's system is because he ended up teaching a naval officer who happened to be a medical doctor. That doctor, his name was Dr. Hayashi, he standardized the protocol, if you will, of how you might deliver Reiki to another person. And then that was fine. He opened a clinic in Tokyo, and he was teaching other people how to use Reiki to assist others therapeutically. And then there was this woman, Japanese-American woman in Hawaii. Her sister died. So she was traveling to, now this is like 1930s. Okay, so just before World War II. But, you know, people aren't zipping around in planes necessarily. I think they're traveling by boat, right? So she goes to Japan to deliver the news to her parents that their daughter has died. And when she is there, she becomes really ill. And the doctors say to her, you must have this surgery. Now, I'm not recommending that anyone avoid having surgery and, you know, use Reiki as a substitute. That is not what I'm saying. But in this romantic retelling of the story, she happens to pass by Dr. Hayashi's clinic, and she says, oh, well maybe I'll integrate this into my treatment protocol. So she does what the medical doctors tell her, but she holds off on the surgery and she incorporates the Reiki into whatever else they're telling her to do. Fast forward 4 months later, and she's pretty much back to normal. She's healed. And she's so amazed. She's convinced that it's because of the Reiki, like the Reiki somehow accelerated what the medical doctors were doing, that she begged Dr. Hayashi to teach her. So he did. And she trained with him for a few years, went back to Japan, came back to Hawaii, trained with him. And then when she returned to Hawaii, she started teaching other people in America about Reiki. And in the end, she trained 22 masters before she passed on. And it's because of those 22 that Dr. Usui's system of Reiki survives, because all the other strains, they died out.
Wow. That's a pretty good story. I had no idea about that. You always wonder where these kind of like different health modalities, who starts them? Where do they come from? You know, and then it's kind of like playing telephone as a kid, like when you would speak into somebody's ear and then you got to try and guess how many people down if it was the same thing. So how many different like variations, like you said, it like, because it could be different. And then the way that maybe you learn, even if you were to teach somebody, they may almost have a different kind of take on it. But when you were mentioning about Reiki not being connected to a certain religion, I read somewhere, and of course, this is something I've seen online, that Catholics are really against Reiki. Have you heard about that at all?
I've come across it more times than not, actually. And it is really interesting because it is mainly Catholics, which is kind of ironic for me because I grew up in an Irish Catholic neighborhood. So, you know, as far, and I went to a Jesuit university. So it's, you know, something I'm very familiar with. And so it's not all Catholics that have a problem with Reiki, but certainly in certain churches, there is a suspicion. You know, they don't really understand it. They feel like it's taking away from, you know, their perception of what God is. Whereas I would argue this is part of what God is in a way. So, yeah. You know, I'm not going to obviously go into all the kind of theological, you know, debates and all the rest of it. Everyone's going to have their own take. But yes, I've had people who have wanted to have sessions with me and then said, oh, wait a minute, I need to check with my church because I'm not sure they're going to be happy with this. And I would say to date, it's been about 75-25. So 75% of those people will come back and say, yeah, I'm fine to go. And about 25% will say, no, sorry, I'd like to cancel the appointment.
Now, when it comes to Reiki, can you speak to how the different chakras and how they work? And can you kind of go through that a little bit?
Yes. Yeah. Great question. Thanks, Jenny. So interestingly, and again, the chakra system is something that's found in the Indian culture or the culture of the Indian subcontinent. And in fact, is the main body of what we know about the chakras comes from the interpretation of a text, I think, that was done in the 19th century. I mean, it's actually relatively new information in the English language, if you will. Now, there are a lot of different chakra systems in the Indian tradition. So some will say that there's 10 chakras. Some will say there's 5 chakras. Some will say that there's, you know, it's not just one system that says that there's the standard 7 chakras that we're mostly used to. The system that we have at the moment is definitely very Westernized, but that's not to say it doesn't have its own benefits. The kind of mainstream chakra system, and chakra comes from the word chakar, which means wheel. And it basically refers to 7 wheels in the body. So we would start with the root chakra, which is I hope this is okay to say, it's in the perineum area is where you would kind of picture that. Then we move up. And so just above the pubic bone would be the sacral chakra. And then right around the belly button or just above the navel would be the solar plexus chakra. Mm-hmm. Then we have the heart chakra. We have the throat. We have what's called the brow or third eye, and then the crown. And these different areas, certainly along the torso, are supposedly analogous to nerve ganglia that gather at those points along like the spinal cord, if you will. And so there is like, I don't want to say scientific basis, but some people have said, oh, look, this is how they match up, if you will. Mm-hmm. I think from the Indian tradition, it was more seen as this kind of like symbolic, metaphorical bridge to the energetic world. And this idea that kind of like if you or any of your listeners know like a transformer, where you have like a step down transformer or step up transformer when the electricity isn't matching whatever it is that you're trying to use. That's kind of like what the chakras are, if that makes any sense. So it's yes. This idea that you've got this energy, the sea of energy around us. Mm-hmm. And when we are consuming food energetically, we have to break it down in our mouths. So when we are trying to consume the energy around us, these 7 centers that I just described are breaking down the energy. They're like the transformer that are stepping the energy down so that we can metabolize it. Does that make sense?
Yes. I like that analogy. And that's a good visual. I do like that. Yeah. I have heard that there are different numbers, like you mentioned, 5, 7 or 12, right?
12, 10, 8. I mean, people have all kinds of different systems.
There's a lot of people that are out there kind of performing Reiki. When it comes to education about it, I would imagine you have to be a certain energy yourself in order to really kind of perform Reiki on another person, I would imagine, right? Not just anybody can really become a Reiki master or healer.
I totally get what you're trying to say. And I think it is such a good question, because for me, the answer is anybody could become a Reiki practitioner if that's what they want. So it really comes down to, you know, what is your desire? And on the back of that, what is your commitment? Because mm-hmm. when you want something and you're committed to the practice, then it's kind of hard for it to not grow automatically. And so when I started off, you know, I remember my first time having a Reiki session. I was in Thailand. We were doing this fast where you didn't eat anything for 7 days. It was crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I was drinking coconut water, and it was funny. I went with my husband, and we were watching the Food Channel, and we're looking at each other like, "Why are we doing this to ourselves?"
That's torture. Yes,
it was quite ironic. But the idea, I guess, was that you know, this was going to kind of purify our bodies. It was going to energize us, and it was going to help us with the IVF, well, the fertility journey, anyway. And I had a Reiki session with this lovely German woman, and she was amazing. And she, you know, I kept saying to her, I just want, you know, I want to get pregnant. And she said at the end of the session, she said, you're not ready. Your branches are bare. They can't support any fruit right now. And she must have seen my face fall, because she just said, but the good news is your roots are deep and they're strong. So just focus on yourself and really nourish yourself. And it will come. And I was like, when will it come? Like, I wasn't listening to her. I was just focused on when's this going to happen? And it really was, that was January 2006. And I became pregnant with my daughter, let's say December, January, 2008. So, you know, it was a 2-year journey to getting to that point where I realized that I had to make certain changes. I had to make certain sacrifices. I had to kind of rejig my life view and my expectations. Mm-hmm. And during that period is when I started learning level one and level two of Reiki. And at first I was very kind of skeptical, I think, of, you know, is this really working? What, you know, my Reiki master would have me take, you know, focus on my ovaries, and we would be, you know, sending energy to my ovaries to produce healthy follicles and healthy eggs, you know, that kind of thing. And the thing is when I got pregnant, I was kind of like, oh, well, maybe there is something to this. But to go back to your original question, you know, over time, I realized that the more I was practicing, the more I was building a skill, if you will. And I really believe that we are all intuitive. We all have this beautiful magic inside of us. And you only have to look into a baby's eyes or, you know, look at young children playing to see how comfortable they can be, right? In themselves and in their environment, to know that, you know, we were once like that, but life kind of beats it out of you, doesn't it? And so right. Unless you commit to getting that magic back, it's not going to be there. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I completely know what you're saying, because it's kind of, when you look at a child, they're just innocent and they go about their day and they just look at the world around them. And it's funny, I remember my daughter, she was always, whenever we walked somewhere, you know, the mall, Disney World, wherever, she was just a browser. She'd look around, she'd kind of take in the sights. And, you know, and my dad, he's always hurry, you know, hurry, this, let's, we got to do everything, you know, super quickly. And come on, girly, let's go, pick up the pace. And she's like, why, Papa? You know, like, and she just la la la, her head would go to the right and the left, and she's looking around. And there are times, and she's 13 now, but there are times when she's in a place that she's unfamiliar with, and she will still kind of do that. You can tell that it's different, because like you said, life kind of beats you down. And this, I think this, you know, the world that we're living in now is just so very different from when we were children, but they tend to look down a lot, you know, whether it's at their phone or and I remind myself too, even when I'm outside, to just look up at the sky. I remember as a child, I would lay on the ground, you lay in the grass and you watch the clouds form, right? Yeah. And just take a minute to literally look up, stop looking down. We're always looking down. We're you know, our heads just, they fall down. We feel defeated. Our heads fall, you know? So look up for a minute and just remember that life doesn't have to take you down all the time. You know, stop for a minute and pretend that you're 6 years old playing in the sand, and or you just want to lay on your beach towel and look at this, you know, the cloud formations and pretend to make a dog or whatever it was that you would see in the clouds, right? So yeah, I definitely can relate to that. It's something I've been practicing more of myself in the past couple of years, is to just really sit with yourself and your own energy, and to really kind of just be, you know, just to be present is so important, you know. And there are times through the day that I know that, okay, that would have bothered me a couple years ago, and I would have acted in whatever such a way, where now something like that happens, and not that I brush it off like it's not a big deal, I just don't let it, I don't internalize it like I used to. But I definitely think that any of these kind of energy, spiritual healing modalities take practice, and not only practice, but consistent practice. And in order to really apply them to your life, you have to be aware of when you're in a specific situation and say, hey, I can take whatever I just learned at, you know, whatever we did, and I can apply it in this situation. And then you're like, man, I'm proud of myself. I didn't just go off the handle like I normally would have, you know? So yeah, definitely. All right. You also work in astrology, right?
Yes. This is more of a recent addition to the toolbox, but when the pandemic hit in 2020, I was working at the time in an integrated health clinic, and I was offering Reiki there. And it was so fabulous. So that is a recent addition to the toolbox, in the sense that I mean, I've been fascinated with astrology since I was little. I got my first chart when I was studying actually here in England. I'm based in the UK, in 1992. And I had my chart read for the first time in 1995. So, you know, astrology's been kind of like in the background for me for a long time. My parents are originally from India, and astrology is huge in India. So yeah, it's something that's always been there. But when the pandemic hit, I really started, I took a deep dive, and it suddenly, came to me. I was obsessed with it, and it came to me that, you know, maybe this is something I could also add to my offerings. I was offering Reiki at that point, and kind of individualized aromatherapy along with the Reiki. I studied aromatherapy in Japan, so that was something that I was kind of mixing together. And I thought, oh, you know, maybe this will work. And the funny bit is that I had been working with an astrologer, and in fact, she was the one who convinced me that I should start offering Reiki and charging for it. She said, you know, what are you doing? You have this skill, you need to start sharing it with others. So she was the one who really kind of gave me a kick up the backside, if you will. And then the following year, I think I was complaining that I felt like I didn't really have a solid friend group. And she said, well, you know, you probably could find community through like a shared interest. And she said, what about astrology? And I went, oh, I just do that for fun. But interestingly, it was another astrologer, I don't know, maybe 10 years before that, who had said something similar to me. And I just kept poo-pooing them. Silly me. Yeah. So here I was with the pandemic. The clinic that I'd been working at was unfortunately had to close with the lockdown, that first lockdown that we had here in the UK. And I was at home. So I started consuming more and more astrology books. I signed up to do courses. I was attending workshops and lectures. And then in the fall of 2020, I went on this entrepreneurial coaching course. And one of the things they encouraged you to do was to offer kind of like 5 free mini sessions of something that you enjoy doing. Well, I ended up offering 35 astrology sessions because people just kept saying, oh, please, can you just do one more? Oh, can you just do one more? And it was awesome. I mean, really, I really enjoyed it. But by the end of the 35, I was like, no, there's definitely something here. And I'm definitely going to, you know, make this an official offering in my toolbox. So,
wow.
So that's what I did.
Absolutely.
It was interesting because when I first started Bodhi Mindful, it was with this idea that I knew I was offering the Reiki, I was offering the aromatherapy. I also learned a form of medical Qigong when I was in Japan. So I was going to be bringing that in. There was an offering of a meridian massage using a special aromatherapy oil. But I had it in my head that Bodhi Mindful was really, it was meant to be this umbrella term because I wanted to bring home to people this idea that it's not just the body and it's not just the mind, it's everything all together. And yeah. So Bodhi refers to the Bodhi tree that the Buddha kind of achieved enlightenment under. And it's sometimes nicknamed the meditation tree, but it's also a play on the idea of body. So Bodhi, body, mindful. And the idea that we can access our best selves when we work on those four different levels that I keep talking about, the mental plane, the emotional plane or heart plane, the physical plane, and the energetic plane. So, and the astrology was just another way of getting in there. So I've been having a lot of fun with it. Yeah.
You know, learning is so much fun. I didn't realize that till I hit like my 40s, I think. Like, I just want to learn something new, you know, and do something different. So I've considered myself forever a student. You have so much to offer and you have so much to give. But yeah, I mean, along the lines of your Reiki and your acupuncture, I think that's all kind of within the same realm of kind of holistic modalities and stuff. But so when you say astrology, what can you kind of narrow that down? What does, when you do a reading on somebody, what is it that you ask for and what is it that it's kind of telling them?
So again, such a good question. With an astrology consultation, we're looking at the person's natal chart. And the natal chart is really kind of a snapshot of the sky the moment you take your first breath. And having an accurate birth time will help yield the chart yields so much more information. But that's not to say that if you don't have an accurate birth time that we still can't look at the chart, but it won't have the same nuance and depth that you'll get from a chart that's accurately timed. And so Carl Jung said that when you have a moment in time, when something is born in a moment of time, it takes on the quality of that time. If you think of like a vintage wine, right? And we're like, oh, that's from, I don't know, you know, 1968, you know? So it's like, okay, that wine has the quality of that year. Well, when we're looking at the natal chart, we're saying that person has the quality of that moment where they took their first breath. And it can be so magical because I know quite a few of my clients have come kind of with very maybe low expectations. They'll usually want to ask questions, and it's always better if you have questions to ask. They'll usually ask questions around career. They'll ask questions around love life. I mean, those are the two big ones. But you know, sometimes there'll be questions about relationships with family members or friendships or love affairs and that type of thing. I mean, studies, there could be a lot of different questions, but the more specific you are with the question, the better. Usually the astrologer will say to you, you know, maybe come up with two or three questions and put them in the order of priority. And then we'll hit the first one first and, you know, work our way down. But a natal chart reading will basically look at that chart And with the astrologer, you can kind of explore what we call the natal promise. So the natal promise is saying, okay, you know, there's a possibility of this happening and a possibility of this happening. And, you know, the planets aren't sitting there making things happen. They're more like the hands of a clock. The clock doesn't make time. It just indicates what time it is. And so it's the same idea. When you have a planet, let's say like right now, Mercury is in retrograde. When you have Mercury doing something in particular, it's kind of indicating what the quality of that time period is. I know it gets very esoteric very quickly, but, and so the idea is then to kind of explore that spectrum. So every planet is going to have energy that has like a lower octave and a higher octave. So for example, if we look at the planet Mars, and everybody has Mars in their chart, everybody. This is, I think, something people don't realize because we're so stuck on like sun sign astrology, is that everybody has the sun in their chart, the moon in their chart. They've got Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. You know, those planets are all in certain, those are the personal planets. The outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, are more generational because they move so slowly. But to go back to Mars, you know, Mars is, let's say, on the lower octave, you know, comes from the Roman name for the god of war. That's what Mars was. Mars was the Roman god of war. So of course it's associated with fighting and strife and conflict. And, you know, you could say that kind of aggressiveness, aggression, if you will, that's maybe a slightly lower octave quality. But, you know, there is a higher octave quality too. You know, sometimes we need to assert ourselves. You know, how do we meet life? You know, in war, you might see some kind of noble sacrifice, right? So nobility, courage, sacrifice. These are also attributes of Mars that we might see like at a different end of the spectrum. If you don't want to say higher and lower octaves, you can just say that's one spectrum. And then fighting and cutting and blood and gore, that's another spectrum, like the other end, if you will. So how we manifest those qualities is partly down to us. That's where free will comes in. And if you know that's the energy, then you have even more awareness around the choices that you can make.
Yeah, that is so deep. But I have one really good question for you. Is it true that men are from Mars and women are from Venus?
I love it.
I had to ask, you know, I mean, really, it's just funny. Oh my goodness. Well,
but one thing that I am very aware of is since my deep dive into looking at charts, I have a better understanding of where people are coming from. And a better kind of view or perspective on this idea that, you know, I process life in one way and you process life in another way. And it's not that one way is better than the other way. It's just two different ways of processing life.
Right. And that's a beautiful thing, because I think it really is ultimately up to us. Tomorrow is never promised. Our future is never promised. So what you choose to do with your own future is ultimately up to you and how you want to spend your future. And I think that it's amazing that you and any other, you know, person that is willing to look outside of themselves to kind of, I don't know the right term, but to kind of better themselves or to make them just more of who they really feel truly inside. But it does almost take like this aha moment in your life. There's got to be something that kind of just like happens. And I don't want to, maybe happens, but, you know, like some people reach a middle age, they have a middle age crisis or, you know, something like that. But honestly, after I turned 40, I I started looking at things differently. And that was around when the pandemic started. So, you know, you kind of sit in this stillness. And I think it was whatever you found, what did you find to occupy your time? How did you occupy your time during the pandemic? We all had it. There wasn't one person in the whole world that was not affected by the coronavirus, right? I mean, so how did you spend your downtime? What did you do? Now is the time for me to actually work on what I've really wanted to do because I have that time. And I think that a lot of us that are now in this new journey, finally, it's kind of coming to light. And I am so happy that I kind of really relied on myself and took the time to take a deep dive into myself because it is so worth it. You know, it really is so worth it. And you just have to do it. There's never a good time. I don't want to be the person that is 70 years old looking back at my life and saying, oh, I should have. I don't want that written on my gravestone. You know, the Jenny should have done that. I don't want that to be that person. So kudos to you too for taking another step in your life, really continuing to learn and using those tools to help others as well.
And that's where, like, you know, the work you do is so important, Jenny, because you forget that there are people who might not know what their options are, might not know that there's a doorway they can walk through. And so to be able to kind of really inspire people and spread the word, if you will, is just, it's so important.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. I love it. So much great information. Thank you so much. But before we go, I have two questions that I ask all my guests. So nothing crazy. If you were to go back any period in time in your life, from when you were little or, you know, in grade school, young adulthood, what time period would you pick and why?
I think I would probably pick it's really silly. I mean, there's a couple of times that I would pick, but the one that really sticks out is getting married to my husband. He's English. I'm American. We met in Japan and we got married in India. So it, wow. You know, yeah, it feels like this kind of, you know, I don't know, one of these like whirlwind, I don't know, stories. And yeah. It was just such a beautiful kind of event for me because I had grown up visiting India when I was really young, from a young age. And so I had like my Indian side and then I had my American side. And then when I went to Japan, I had my Japan side, like all my friends from Japan. And so the wedding was amazing because it was like all my worlds were colliding. Aww. And it was magical. So yeah.
That's great. I'd
have to pick that, I think.
Oh, that's so special. That's great. And if you could tell the audience, for anybody that, if you have any piece of advice to tell anybody that might be struggling from a chronic illness, chronic pain, any type of mental illness, what advice would you give them?
I think the first thing I would do is speak to friends and family with regards to what options might be available. I had one friend who totally did not believe in homeopathy, and lo and behold, it worked for her. I had another friend who didn't believe in acupuncture, and it worked for her. My husband wasn't a big believer before we started with the shiatsu massage. And then he was just like, okay, we're doing this every week. You know, I mean, so I think, you know, really ask around. And usually the best way to find practitioners is through recommendation. But if you hear something, like you were saying, sometimes the universe will nudge you. If you hear about something or read something that catches your eye, then research it.
Thank you for sharing that. That was great. Wow. Well, Jolly, thank you so much for this conversation. I really enjoy speaking with you and your lovely smile. And reminder to all of the guests too, don't forget that these guest interviews are uploaded to my YouTube channel. So you can not only see our beautiful faces and you can see our expressions and what goes on behind the scenes sometimes when it's, you can't just see the, or when you can't just listen to the audio. Thank you so much. I know that it's late where you are, so I really appreciate it that you stayed up and spoke to me.
Oh, so, it's such an honor, Jenny. Honestly, I love talking to you. So,
oh, thank you. And then, can you just give the audience some information on where they can find you?
So, I do have a website. It's www.bodhimindful. So that's BODHIMINDFUL, all one word, .com. I am on Instagram at BodhiMindful, and I'm also on Facebook at BodhiMindful, and you can message me from any of those sites and I can get back to you really quickly.
All right. Awesome. I'll put them in the show notes too, so everybody can just click on them and see your beautiful face and get in touch with you and connect with you. Thanks again for everything. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Hi friends, let me take a quick minute and thank our very first show sponsor. If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor is totally free. It's so easy, even I can do it. Trust me, that means you can do it too. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. Thank you all for being here. I am so glad we found each other. See you next time. Have an incredible day, my beautiful friends.